Chapter 12. Tomorrow. Where do we stand today? Will man dominate space one day? Did unknown beings from the infinite reaches of the cosmos visit the Earth in the remote past? Are unknown intelligences somewhere in the universe trying to make contact with us? Is our age, with its discoveries that are taking the future by storm, really so terrible? Should the most shattering results of research be kept secret? Will medicine and biology discover a way of restoring deep frozen men to life? Will men from Earth colonize new planets? Will they mate with the inhabitants they find there? Will men create a second, third, and fourth Earth? Will special robots replace surgeons one day? Will hospitals in the year 2100 be spare parts stores for defective men? Will it become possible in the distant future to prolong man's life indefinitely with artificial hearts, lungs, kidneys, etc.? Will Huxley's brave new world come true one day in all its improbability and chilling inhumanity? A compendium of such questions could easily get as big as the New York telephone directory. Not a day passes without something brand new being invented somewhere in the world. Every day another question can be struck from the list of impossibilities as answered. Edinburgh University received a preliminary grant of $6,480,000 from the Nuffield Trust for the development of an intelligent computer. The prototype of this computer was put into conversation with a patient, and afterward the patient would not believe that he had been talking to a machine. Dr. Donald Michie, who designed this computer, claimed that his machine was beginning to develop a personal life. The new science is called futurology. Its goal is the planning and detailed investigation and understanding of the future by all the technical and mental means available. Think tanks are springing up all over the world. What they amount to are monasteries of scientists of today who are thinking for tomorrow. There are 164 of these think tanks at work in America alone. They accept commissions from the government and heavy industry. The most celebrated think tank is the RAND Corporation at Santa Monica in California. The U.S. Air Force was responsible for its foundation in 1945. The reason? High-ranking officers wanted a research program of their own on intercontinental warfare. Some 850 selected scientific authorities now work in the two-story, magnificently laid-out research center. The first ideas and plans for the foundations of mankind's most improbable adventures are born here. As early as 1946, RAND scientists evaluated the military usefulness of a spaceship. When RAND developed the program for various satellites in 1951, it was called Utopian. Since RAND has been functioning, the world can thank this research center for 3,000 accurate accounts of hitherto unobserved phenomena. RAND scientists have published more than 110 books, which have advanced our culture and civilization immeasurably. There is no end in sight to this research work, and there is unlikely to be one. Similar work for the future is being done in the following institutes: the Hudson Institute at Harmon-on-Hudson, New York, the Tempo Center for Advanced Studies belonging to General Electric at Santa Barbara, California, the Arthur Little Institute at Cambridge, Massachusetts, and the Battle Institute at Columbus, Ohio. Governments and big business simply cannot manage without these thinkers for the future. Governments have to decide on their military plans far in advance. Big businesses have to calculate their investments for decades ahead. Futurology will have to plan the development of capital cities for 100 or more years ahead. Equipped with present-day knowledge, it would not be difficult to estimate, say, the development of Mexico for the next 50 years. In making such a forecast, every conceivable fact would be taken into account, such as the existing technology, means of communication and transport, political currents, and Mexico's potential opponents. If this forecast is possible today, unknown intelligences could certainly have made such a forecast for the planet Earth 10,000 years ago. Mankind has a compulsive urge to think out in advance and investigate the future with all the potentialities at its command. Without this study of the future, we would probably have no chance of unraveling our past. For who knows whether important clues for the unraveling of our past do not lie around the archaeological sites, whether we do not trample them heedlessly underfoot because we do not know what to make of them. That is the very reason why I advocated a utopian archaeological year. In the same way that I am unable to believe in the wisdom of the old patterns of thought, I do not ask others to believe my hypothesis. Nevertheless, I expect and hope that the time will soon be ripe to attack the riddle of the past without prejudice, making full use of all the refinements of technology. It is not our fault that there are millions of other planets in the universe. It is not our fault that the Japanese statue of Tokomai, which is many thousands of years old, has modern fastenings and eye apertures on its helmet. It is not our fault that the stone relief from Palenque exists. It is not our fault that Admiral Pire Reis did not burn his ancient maps. It is not our fault that the old books and traditions of human history exhibit so many absurdities. But it is our fault if we know all this, but disregard it and refuse to take it seriously. Man has a magnificent future ahead of him, a future which will far surpass his magnificent past. We need space research and research into the future and the courage to tackle projects that now seem impossible. For example, the project of concerted research into the past, which can bring us valuable memories of the future. Memories which will then be proved and which will illuminate the history of mankind for the blessing of future generations. This concludes Chariots of the Gods. Tantor Audio is proud to present a bonus interview with author Eric von Daniken.
Eric von Daniken's first book, Chariots of the Gods, became a worldwide bestseller following its publication in 1968 and has been translated into 32 languages. Tantor Audio is very pleased to be releasing for the first time on audio four of Mr. von Daniken's books, Chariots of the Gods, Twilight of the Gods, The Eyes of the Sphinx, and History is Wrong. And we are very honored to have Mr. von Daniken with us today as our guest. Welcome, Mr. von Daniken.
Well, welcome myself. Happy to be with you on the phone.
Thank you so much. Now, of course, you are the Swiss author best known for your claims about extraterrestrial influences. And this is a topic that has really been popular since 1968, since your very first book, Chariots of the Gods. And of course, we've had movies and a television series, and there's a current series on History Channel now about ancient aliens, and all of this can be attributed to your early work. And so I was wondering if you could tell the listeners, what was it, what were your earliest experiences, and at what age did you first have the feeling about these ancient aliens?
I was educated in Switzerland. I am Swiss, and I was educated for 6 years in a Swiss boarding school led by Jesuits. So I was a strict Catholic. And in my boarding school, we had also to learn Latin and Greek. And we had to make translations for some parts of the Old Testament of the Bible. Now, you have to understand, I was a very, very deep believer in God. By the way, I am still a deep believer in God. I'm one of these persons who still pray. But for me, as a young man, God had to have a few minimal qualities. For example, God would never make mistake, or God would never use a vehicle to move from one point to the other, because God is all over. We say he's omnipotent, etc. Now, by making translations from the Bible, especially from the book of the prophet Ezekiel, I had of a certain doubt in my own religious education, because the prophet Ezekiel describes, by the way, in the first person, as an eyewitness, he describes a vehicle who descends from the sky. He describes the wheel of the vehicle, the wings of the vehicle. He describes the noise which the vehicle makes, etc. He calls all this the splendorness of God. Now, of course, as a young man, I asked my professors, what's this all about? And the professor said, well, Eric, you have to consider this as a vision. Ezekiel had a vision. But I could not believe in the vision because it was too natural, the explanation. So I simply wanted to know if other communities in antiquity also have similar stories like the ones we find in the Bible. And so I started to research. And finally, I came up with the hypothesis, or with the speculation, if you wish, that our ancestors must have seen some extraterrestrials long, long time ago. Now, at that time, our ancestors were Stone Age people. They could not understand what was going on. So they believed, of course, erroneously, they believed that these extraterrestrials were some kind of gods. We all know that there is only one God. But that was the misunderstanding in the past, and that's how it all started.
It's almost 50 years since the publication of your first book. Why is this still capturing the imagination of young people and older people?
Because so many things have changed in the past 50 years. You see, after Chariots of the Gods, I was, for example, attacked by some of the scientific community. They say this is all ridiculous, because no extraterrestrial, even if they would exist, they would never be able to visit us, because there are distances with the speed of light, and the next stars are far away, so they could never reach us. In the meantime, we see quite possibilities how interstellar space travel would be possible. Or I speculated at that time that some of these gods made some genetical experiments with our ancestors. Of course, I was ridiculed. In the meantime, we know that such genetical experiments are possible. Our genetics are doing it every day. And so on, the situation has changed completely. Also, I know, and we know, much more of the old texts today than we knew 50 years ago. So many new old texts have been found in ruins all over the world. And this is my speciality, to find it and, if possible, to translate it. And if I'm not able to translate it, so I hire some professors who make translations. You see, in the beginning, in the old texts, we always hear, for example, that some humans, some of our forefathers, were taken into the heaven. Now, the word heaven, in the religious sense, means a place of happiness, a place where you are united with God, with the Lord, after death. In the meantime, we understand that the word heaven in ancient texts was not just a religious meaning. Heaven was also space. So space is not the same thing as heaven. You see, the sky is up there. Some of our ancestors were taken into the sky and were brought back.
You have over 24 books, and they've been translated into 20 or more languages. Can you tell us, are you working on any books currently?
Of course, I'm always working. You see, I have a very big archive, and in my archive, I have about 60,000 pictures, which I made over the last 50 years worldwide. And at the moment, I'm working on 5 volumes of a picture book. Every volume has just 200 pictures, so with 5 volumes, we will have altogether 1,000 pictures. I show the most incredible things in archaeology which exists around the world.
Before we end our conversation today, I think my son, who is a big fan of yours and of ancient aliens, would like me to ask you, what do you think is going to happen in 2012?
The Maya calendar has a starting date. And the starting date of the Maya calendar, if we translate it into our Christian calendar, is August 14th, 3114 BC. That was the starting point of the Maya calendar. Now, every normal calendar has no ending date. For example, in our Christian calendar, we can go on and count and count. We can say, now it's September 2014, or so on. Not in the Maya calendar. The Maya calendar has an ending date, and you can translate the ending date into our calendar. And out comes December 23rd, 2012. Then the Maya calendar ends. Now we have Maya writings, even in some stone pyramids, where they say, at that date, a god with the name Bolon Yokte, that's the name of one of these gods, Bolon Yokte will return to Earth. So that would mean that on December 23rd, 2012, some extraterrestrials would return to Earth. Fantastic. The only problem we have is the calculation of the calendar. the specialists in Maya language, Maya astronomy, have calculated the starting point, as I said before, to August 14, 3114 BC. If this translation into our calendar is wrong, then the end date, 2012, will be wrong too. So we have traditions of the Maya which says some of the gods will return, but I would never count on the date. They will return one day, but if this will be in December 2012 or later or maybe earlier, nobody knows.
Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.